Chapter 33. The Forest for the Trees. During the late 1800s, epidemics of a new disorder began to appear in the United States. At first, it was in the Northeast, then it spread across the country to Wisconsin, then Washington. Initially, they called it teething paralysis, then infantile paralysis, then finally, later on, polio. Doctors were completely stumped as to what was causing previously healthy children to wake up suddenly unable to walk. As the illness became more common, earlier accounts of its appearance surfaced. A few children in 1841 Louisiana, another few in England, a case in 1789, then an Egyptian painting of someone with a cane and withered limb. These occurrences certainly resemble polio as we now think of it, but whether they were actually polio is impossible to say. As doctors struggled to explain the sudden rise in paralyzed children, many suggested that polio had been with us all along, just hidden amongst a less regimented system of medical documentation. As the number of outbreaks and its victims began to grow, it was clear this was not the case. Polio had transitioned from a rare event into an epidemic form. There were certainly similar cases sprinkled in isolation throughout medical literature that by chance must have been identical to the modern definition of polio, but as the number of outbreaks and its victims began to grow, it was clear that polio had transitioned from a rare event into epidemic form. Autism appears to follow this same path. Through exhaustive search, a few mentions of children that closely resemble the traits described by Connor or Asperger have been discovered amongst the medical literature. In the early 1900s, a physician in Austria began to catalog a few children who had developed normally until their third or fourth year, but regressed soon after with components of mental illness that resembled autism. In 1921, another physician described the account of a girl with behaviors that anyone would identify as autism. There is little doubt that children exhibiting the symptoms of autism had appeared before the 1930s, but as it became clear that many children were beginning to be affected, confusion set in. Heredity, or poor genetics, appeared to have nothing to do with the condition, and the notion poor parenting skills had caused this specific malady and no others was beginning to fade. The mistaken response was to assume that autism, like polio, had always existed, hidden in between the sheaves of undiscovered medical reports. The alacrity with which physicians frequently document their discoveries is to be admired. The prestige and personal satisfaction that come from having been the first to recognize or label a new condition is often a driving force in their curiosity. As a result, medical literature is full of isolated cases of strange maladies that no one had ever heard of or would hear of again. One could spend years poring through case reports of unique conditions penned by physicians eager to understand and potentially help those who suffered from them. With exhaustive medical accounts documenting the last 250 years, a thorough examination has yielded but a few cases resembling autism. There is overlap, such as the isolation of children with schizophrenia, but as for cases that are legitimately similar to Connor's observation of autism, there are less than a handful. Even the early 1900s physician, whose several accounts of regression seemed remarkably familiar, would likely diagnose his patients with childhood disintegrative disorder today. The fact that no one else had documented what he had seen, even though someone was always around to document various disorders in full, was a marker to how infrequent its appearance actually was. It's highly unlikely that both Connor and Asperger, psychiatrists who'd seen thousands of children between them, documented numerous neurological disorders, but were both somehow able to miss the most peculiar and common one. Another element of their discoveries, one not often discussed, presents a dilemma to those who insist the disorder was absent because of errors in diagnosis. If autism had previously existed in one form or another for the previous 200 years, despite their insistence to the contrary, its predilection for boys over girls did not. Since the early 1800s, there were no mental illnesses, save perhaps alcoholism, that preyed heavily on males. Throughout records of asylums and institutions starting in 1745, you will find nearly an even number of males and females receiving treatment for each and every disease. If autism was hidden away in the disordered mental illness case studies of old, this defining characteristic should make it bubble to the surface. But it doesn't. females struggled with mental illness just as frequently as males. Indeed, not a single neurological disease appears to favor males very heavily. For those who suggest the current gender differential is due to diagnostic prejudice, judgments made because of the variations in behavioral expectations of the girls and boys, one would expect that 100 years ago, with the pronounced social mores of the era, girls might be even more underrepresented than they are today. They clearly were not, and suffered the same maladies in equal numbers as boys. A final thought regarding the missing diagnosis theory on the appearance of autism. Historically speaking, from poliomyelitis to infantile psychosis, medical diagnoses have followed a singular, repeating pattern of increasing specificity. As new discoveries are made and our understanding of illness increases, new diseases, syndromes, and disorders are created, each with a narrower definition than the superset that came before it. People who handle medical billing for insurance companies can attest to this. The ICD codes used to codify diagnoses increase in complexity every year. Over the last few decades, there have been several changes to the criteria used to diagnose autism. Some have made for a broader definition, while others have made it narrower. Regardless, the rate of autism appears to be unaffected by these changes. It has held to an exponential hockey stick rise since it first began being diagnosed in the 1940s, an increase unfortunately mirrored by many other childhood illnesses, disorders which apparently were also hidden amongst the medical accounts of the 1800s and 1900s. Doctors do have more specific labels children may be given that put them just outside of the autism box: sensory processing disorder, PANS, PANDAS, Rett syndrome, and childhood disintegrative disorder, to name but a few. If diagnostic changes were going to significantly affect the rate of autism up or down, it should have been visible by now. Unfortunately, the steady climb continues unabated. While some insist that diagnostic manipulation and gender stereotypes are responsible for the rise in autism and skewed male-to-female ratios, there are some who insist the addition of aluminum to the diphtheria vaccine in 1932 was incapable of causing harm because of the amount. If the dose makes the poison, as the saying goes, and the dosage of aluminum is so tiny, it seems impossible that it was capable of causing the neurological harm of autism. A recent study on the effects of aluminum hydroxide has changed everything we know about the dose and the poison.